thanks so much for meeting me. Really appreciate that. Just to get kicking straight away, could you tell me a bit about your background?
Sure. Well, I grew up in Melbourne, in Australia. And I went to school here and I graduated as a doctor in 1989. And I have two sons, 24 and 26 years of age. And I worked as a doctor for 15 years in family practice and emergency medicine. And I still do a little bit of emergency medicine. My passion these days is around rites of passage and really supporting boys to become the best young men they can be and to bring out the best in them. I have a huge concern around what I'm seeing in young men today and then that actually impacting the rest of their lives. And I'm really interested in, you know, how can we support boys so they become really inspired, positive young men who not only want to do the best they can, you know, in their own lives, but who can contribute back into society.
Excellent. That jumped into the next question. Can you give me some insights into your leadership program that is about to go ahead the next 3 days here?
Yeah, we're actually setting up. You can hopefully see in the background here the leadership program stuff getting organized, which is exciting. And so my work is around rites of passage, and whilst I focus a lot of my attention on the particular rite of passage which occurs when a boy becomes a young man, a rite of passage is actually about creating a transformation in a person's life. So we all have these different stages of life that we go through. We're born, we're babies, we're young children, we're sort of bigger children, we're young adults, we get married, we're older adults, we become elderly, and eventually we die. And they're all actually stages. And the idea of a rite of passage is to mark each of those stages so that on my journey, I know where I'm at. And to change from any one of those stages to the next stage, it's actually a transformational process. You know, a boy is not a big baby. And a teenager is not a big boy, and a man is not a big teenager, etc. So my interest is in educating people around what does it take to create a transformational process. You know, if you and I go for a walk up a mountain, we can go for a walk up that mountain, come back, and at the end of the day or whatever say, you know, that was a good walk, see you later. Or we can go up that mountain and come back and go, wow, that's changed my life. And what I'm interested in and what I've studied and what I teach people is what are the elements that you would bring in so that that walk up the mountain or that thing that happens on a school camp or that thing that happens at your work or whatever actually becomes a life-changing process. And I'll be training people the next 3 days to understand those elements that are required to create a rite of passage or a transformational process.
Brilliant. Could I get you to touch on quickly maybe what Indigenous tribes would have done for their rites of passage?
Yeah. Well, that's a really interesting thing. And I studied Indigenous communities all over the world. And what I found was that they all had rites of passage to mark all these key stages in life. And there was always the same elements were involved. So whoever was going through that rite of passage was in some way removed from their everyday life and the rest of the community. Then they went through a transformational process, which has its own elements. And then they came back into the community and they were seen and recognized as now having a different social status. So that was actually recognized. And look, so that it's easy if we look at examples that we have today, a wedding is a classical rite of passage. When someone gets married, they are temporarily removed from the rest of the community and they become part of the wedding party. And then they go through the transformational process. And then after that, they are seen as Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so. And the woman will wear a ring and often the man so that people know they're married. There may be a name change. They you know, will move in together. They have children, they start a family, you know, they are now at a new stage in their life and it is actually formally marked. And when they go through it, when they're actually in the wedding, they wear special clothes that you'd only ever wear for a wedding. And the holy man of the community comes out, the priest or the rabbi or the imam or the celebrant, and there's actually a formal process to mark this transformational stage.
Brilliant. So just to focus in more on that age group of 14 to 18, of that time when it can be particularly difficult, when that rites of passage normally occurs or would have occurred with indigenous tribes. What's going on now currently as a rite of passage without the guidance of the elders or as such?
So the 14 to 18 year old period is so interesting because that is the stage when a boy is becoming a young man, a girl is becoming a young woman. And it's such a critical time. And every indigenous community would have rites of passage at all different stages, but the one they would put the most effort into was actually this transition from boy to man or girl to woman, because they realized that's the most important transition of all. And it's because you change basically from child behavior to adult behavior. And child behavior is, it's all about me. I'm the center of the universe. I want attention. Look at me, look at me. You know, I never take responsibility for anything. If something goes wrong, it's someone else's fault. I want power. I want all the power. And I want a mother. A boy wants a mother and a girl wants a hero father. And that's typical child behavior. And in an eight-year-old, that's completely fine. But when we end up with men, especially in positions of power, who only think about themselves, who don't take responsibility for their actions, who are always needing acknowledgement, and who are still looking for a mother, that's actually a serious problem. And when we end up with women who are still trying to pretend that they're, you know, teenage girls and needing attention from all the men and still looking for a man to rescue them, that's a problem. And because we're not creating formal rites of passage for our young teenagers now, they're actually doing it themselves. So a lot of the risk-taking behavior, the stupid things that you see them doing, might be driving their cars as fast as they can, or the binge drinking, or getting in fights, or joining gangs, or, you know, there are lots of different ways that they do it, but basically they are trying to self-initiate. And that's a big problem, because you're not supposed to do it for yourself or even for your peers. It's supposed to be the responsibility of us as elders to be creating the process for the teenagers that really acknowledges they're becoming young men and young women. And unfortunately, what I saw a lot as a doctor and in my life is that what happens in that stage, in those years, when it's not done properly, it can actually affect young men and women for the rest of their lives. Now, a lot of my medicine, I realized I was treating, especially men, older men who'd been struggling with addictions their whole lives. And then I realized that a lot of their addictions were to cover up self-esteem issues. And a lot of those self-esteem issues started when they were teenagers. Like, it's crazy. I was like, wow, if we could deal with these issues when they were teenagers, then they wouldn't have to do the addiction their whole life. And that would be a very different outcome.
And for the man then that has struggled many, many years with, say, alcohol abuse, what would you suggest then?
I don't think it's ever too late to create a rite of passage. And I mean, if we think about what it's supposed to achieve, in that transition, there are two key things that I look at. And one is an understanding of the difference between boy and man behavior. An understanding that as a man, I need to be responsible. I need to, you know, when something doesn't go wrong, I need to deal with it. I need to realize I'm part of a community. I'm not the center of the universe. I need to realize that I'm mortal and I'm going to die one day. and I need to stop looking for a mother and actually have relationships with women. And it's never too late for men to actually look at their own lives and see in what part of their life they're acting like a boy and in what part they're acting like a man. That's a very powerful process. And the other really important thing about a rite of passage is that it aims to really name and acknowledge the individual gifts, the talents, the spirit and the genius of each person. And the my belief, what Indigenous communities believe and what I believe is each one of us is different and we all have our different talents. We all have our different skills and our genius. And we need all of those in our community to have a diverse community. And what better for someone to be doing than what they actually love doing and what they're best at doing? And I see a lot of men and women who spend 20, 30, 40 years, their whole lives even, doing something that they didn't want to do and they know is not the right thing for them, but someone somewhere along the line told them that's what they should do because that's how they make a lot of money. Or, I didn't do that, son, so you go and do it. Whatever. So the other thing is it's never too late to go, you know, who do I really think I am? How do I really want to live this life? How can I live the best life I can live and be the best for the community and all of that sort of stuff? So, yeah, I think at any age, in fact, I love seeing older people doing rites of passage and really getting in touch with what they believe is their true purpose.
Oh, that's very powerful. On the words you picked up there, on the spirit, and that's probably from playing field sports, it's often spoken about but never really experienced more in regards the spirit of the group and how the group in the, you know, that last 10, 15 minutes or 5 minutes off the game, it's the spirit that carries through.
Yeah.
How can that role be built upon more? Or would you see a rites of passage be very important for field athletes or, you know, 15, 16, 17 year olds on the pitch to perform at their best?
Yeah. You know, I just want to talk about spirit for a moment because spirit is such a tricky thing. And we're at an age where we're at the most spiritual age and the least spiritual age at the same time. And I believe that a lot of people are looking for spiritual purpose. But as soon as you mention spirit, people run as fast as they can. And for me, the most powerful things are those which you can clearly identify and see the benefits of in, let's say, a so-called spiritual role and in a non-spiritual way of looking at it. So for me, if a rite of passage is about bringing out the best in a person or bringing out their spirit, they're the same thing. But, you know, you're just working to someone's strengths. You know, there's no religious or spiritual connotations. We're just working to someone's strengths. Or we're working to their spirit. And, you know, same in a team. You say at the end it's their spirit that brings them through. Another way of saying it could be their, you know, their camaraderie, their trust, their friendship, their depth of shared purpose. You know, there's lots of different ways that you can describe it. And it's not that one is right and all the others are wrong. But we know something happens. You know, when you're in that place, something is going on that is greater than each of the individuals. Yeah. And that's the most special place to be, I reckon. And whether a rite of passage would be a useful thing in a sporting team, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, you asked me before this interval if I've worked with any sporting teams, and I haven't specifically, but I've been starting to be approached by them. And if you think about a sporting team along the lines that I've talked about, each person has their skills on the field. And if they are really recognized and acknowledged and we get each person doing what they're best at and being supported by everyone else, you would like to think that would be how the team would do best.
Absolutely.
And having said that, as a man, if I realize that it's not just about me, it's about the whole team, I'm prepared to do something I wouldn't necessarily choose to do because I know it benefits the whole team. Whereas if I'm just thinking about myself, if you have a team of individuals, we know that doesn't do nearly as well as a team that's really working together. And one is a team made up of children and the other is a team made up of adults working together.
Oh, it's a really powerful point. I'm just gonna... Okay, so on the team environment, I've played many different teams, college, Melbourne, Boston, London, Dublin, Waterford. And in each place, the mentor had their own role. What role would you see, or what responsibility would a mentor have to these group of individuals, say 16, 17?
A mentor is a huge role. I mean, look, first of all, I just want to define that a team is basically a community. And that the, you know, young men being involved in a community is hugely powerful for them. And in fact, young men want a community. And if we don't provide communities, they'll often find their own, and that can be in gangs and you know, unhealthy ways. Not always, it can be in healthy ways, but, you know, they actually search for their community. And a team can be a wonderful community. And if it has a mentor, you know, I also believe that young men are seeking guidance, and they want to know what it's going to be like to be an older man. What they don't want is to be told how to live their lives and what they're supposed to be doing. But what they absolutely do want is they want to be able to ask questions, and they want to be able to hear stories of someone who's been there before them. So the mentor role is a wonderful one, where a boy or a young man has a confidant, has someone who he can ask questions to, has someone whose stories he can hear. And in a team environment, I would consider that to be invaluable.
And what qualities would, I say, a top mentor have as such?
Yeah. So I think a big thing for a mentor is empathy and caring. And so, for example, if a boy, you know, approaches a mentor, then instead of telling him what he needs to do, you know, the mentor discusses it with him and will tell a story. Oh, I remember when I was your age, I had a situation that was similar, or a different situation, but there were similarities, and this is what I did. And I'm actually glad I did that, or actually I'm sorry I did that. And it's actually the sharing of stories which is the best way of passing on wisdom and knowledge. So, yeah, there's a big role for mentors in that regards.
And from my experience, I also often have a very strong mentor, win at all costs, with sacrifice, not a strong player for a new player, and it can be often very ego-driven, just to win on the pitch. What lasting effects can that have on a team?
Well, yeah, I mean, we live in a culture of win at no cost, at any cost, sorry. And I think that's a very childish, I think it's a boy attitude. It's not do your best, it's win at all costs. And I think, you know, what young men learn in a sporting situation, many of them will take into their adult lives. And the whole win at all costs type attitude, you know, that all costs can mean to the detriment of other people, and can even mean cheating, lying, whatever. And there's a lot of men out there who will do anything to win, to get the contract, to get more money. And if that means being dishonest or whatever, they'll do it. And once again, I think that's a big problem. And if it means stepping over other people to get there, they'll do it. Or if it means, you know, not caring about other people, they'll do it. I mean, I'm always concerned, you know, when I hear about what's gone on in our financial crisis and the banking world, where, you know, things get set up that are blatantly, you know, dishonest, and people's life savings get sacrificed so that someone over here who's already got a bucket load of money can make even more. And I think that's a big problem in our society.
Excellent response. Can I ask, so an emotional motivational side, to harness the group, storytelling, very powerful. But then also, I'm going to give my thought and see what you think, to allow the group to self-motivate rather than be that real driving force. So then, for me, the leaders step up naturally. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that building the strength of the community will build a stronger team. I think those two things go together. And yes, I agree with self-motivation. I don't think motivation should be through fear and threats. I think it should be through, you know, a positive input. And sharing stories is a very powerful way to build community. But another really powerful way to build community in a team is that at certain point to get the team members to acknowledge the gifts and strengths, the genius and the spirit of their teammates. Something as simple as, you know, once a week at training, picking out two or three of the members and one at a time those young men sit on a chair in front of the rest of the team, and people in the team take turns telling that person who's on the chair what they admire and respect about him, both on the field and off the field, what they even love about him. You know, that, when we actually acknowledge each other and when we are acknowledged, it changes people's lives. And after that sort of thing, you don't need to be motivated anymore. You know, when I know that my mates love me, care about me, respect me, I'll do anything.
Oh, that's particularly strong. I'd like to ask is, for, say, the parents, so from being a mentor, often you can experience parents shouting and roaring, yeah, or acting like childs on the sideline.
Yeah.
And, you know, under 16 team, you want to harness the group, bring them together, yeah, and develop the overall team or, yeah, community, as you put. How would you deal with that situation?
Yeah, parents are tricky because, you know, you can do this tremendous work with the young teens and then they go home and it all gets undone as soon as they walk in the door by their dad. So for me, the big thing is to try and enroll the parents as well and to let them know what you're doing, or even to get them actually there involved when you're doing something. You know, get the parents in there sharing their stories about when they played sport. Get the parents honouring their sons and other boys in the team. You know, actually bring the parents into the process, if possible. Or, at the least, inform the parents of what you're doing and how you are intending to deal with the boys. And one of my basic philosophies in my teachings is to never shame a young man. If you shame a young man, telling him he's hopeless, he's useless, he's this, he's that, that actually wounds him. And that he can carry his whole life. I know many men who will tell me an instance of being shamed and how that's affected them their whole lives. One of the most common is, you know, a young man who tries something new, it doesn't work, and he gets shamed or laughed at, and for the rest of his life he'll never try anything new. You know, those effects go on. So I always say, you know, if someone does something that's not okay, you have to separate the person from the behaviour. You know, Lorcan, I know you're a great young man, I know you're this and that, but what you did doesn't fit with our culture or isn't the best you could have done. Excuse me, you know, how could we do this better next time? What can we learn from this? In the first instance, if I shame you and tell you you're hopeless and useless, I drive you away from me. In the second, when I say, hey, I think you're better than this and you're great, but what happened is not okay, how are we going to deal with that? When I do it that way, then we actually become closer and I can really support you and you can really learn.
Excellent. So I've hit the majority of the questions that blew away there. But
I love it when the questions blow away.
I feel more comfortable then and not on script as well, which is important. On a health side, on a preventative health side,
yeah,
and from your experience, yeah, in the hospital industry, could you speak about maybe the influences and what I've observed in modern day is technology being a big role or part in modern day, yeah, kids' lives? Now, I, yeah, think it's a broad topic, but
I'd like, well, they're two huge things, and I'll answer them separately, even though there is a relationship. When you talk about health, you know, I believe when someone knows what they're passionate about and what they want to do and they're motivated, they will naturally be more healthy. You know, you described to me before this interview started how you know, you're doing hurling, you're playing in some high-level competition, so you want to be as healthy as possible, you want to eat as well as possible, you want to train well, all of that sort of stuff. Makes sense. So you're not going to go and do drugs and massive amounts of alcohol every night, and because you've got a vision and a purpose. But for all the kids out there who don't have a vision and a purpose, because they've never found it, no one's ever acknowledged them, those kids, it's like, I've got nothing. There's nothing out there. So why wouldn't I eat crap food and take drugs and drink alcohol? Because when I do those things for a little while, I actually feel good. So, I also believe, you know, in older men, the ones who are unhappy at work or in their marriage or whatever, they're going to do unhealthy things to try and compensate. They're going to drink, they're going to take drugs, they're going to eat more, you know, all that sort of stuff. But when someone is really satisfied and motivated about their life, then we want to be healthy and we want to eat well. We want to get enough sleep. We want to have good relationships. So for me, there's a huge link between rites of passage and preventative health. And the other thing you talked about, which is technology. Technology is a huge concern for me. There's been a tsunami of technology in the last 10, 20 years. And it really worries me that the kids are growing up saturated by technology. Nowadays, when you buy a pram to push your baby, it has a cradle for your iPhone or your iPad or whatever. And they ask you what size cradle you want, so that as you're pushing your kid or whenever you stop, you can have the phone there and the kid can be looking at the images on the phone rather than looking around.
That is scary.
That's completely scary. And they have full access to it. And we also know that the brainwave development is very much influenced by what we actually do. So the more that a particular brainwave route gets used, that's the brainwave pattern that will develop. So if you're, as a kid, really strongly using the brainwave patterns that are created by exposure to technology, then that's what the ones that will develop. And one of the things about technology is it's constant stimulation. And so now we get kids who need constant stimulation. And that robs them of their creativity, that robs them of their ability to actually relate to other people. You know, I gave a talk in Sweden last year with a man who runs digital detox clinics. Not alcohol detox.
Digital detox.
Yeah. In Sweden last year for a man who runs digital detox clinics for young men. So not alcohol detox, not drug detox. Digital technology. You know, that these young men are totally addicted to their computer screens, playing all night video games, and basically, you know, not doing other things.
Yeah.
Not studying properly, not getting enough sleep, not exercising, eating shit food while they're doing it, all that sort of stuff. You know, it's a major issue. And we're only just starting to see the impact. And you know, it's a first generational problem. But there are universities in Australia who are now finding more and more the adverse effects of exposure to technology at a young age.
Yeah, that's such a strong topic, and it's an observation when even often you can say with youths and kids, but it's very common for me to be with friends and 3 out of 4 people have their phones out. That for me, airplane mode is a must now to be able to communicate or have real conversations.
Yeah.
On that, and not to get too sidetracked on that one, and a big problem with males and relational buildings that I suppose I've experienced or came across is pornography.
Yeah.
How would you discuss that?
Well, first of all, pornography needs to be discussed. It can't be denied or ignored, because every young man from 14, probably 12, has seen pornography. And in fact, anyone who's got a smartphone has seen pornography. And kids are getting smartphones younger and younger now. I think the average age of smartphone ownership is about 12 now. And it goes down by 2 years every year.
Okay.
So that's how they're learning about sex. And they're believing that that's the way sex should be. And when you look at pornography, it's not a good message that they're being given. And there's lots of evidence coming out that that's the way boys are thinking it should be. And girls are starting to modify their own sexual behaviors because they also think that's the way they're supposed to be. Yeah. And that's a huge problem. And I believe boys have to be having discussions with older men about sex, relationships, and pornography.
Yeah.
And when we run our camps and we create situations where boys and men talk, we have a talk about relationships and sex and pornography. And one of the questions that we actually ask the men towards the end is, you know, what's the difference between having sex and making love? And the boys need to be involved in these conversations, and they need to know that what they see in the porn that they look at is not actually real.
Yeah.
That's the big thing, to really know that it's not real.
And you threw out a great one there, to have conversations. Is there any other activities or techniques that you would suggest for people with detox on digital or suffering from overuse of pornography or not being even comfortable to have that conversation?
Yeah, I mean, the big thing for me is I want these conversations to start young. I want to be working with boys 13, 14, 15 when they can still, you know, before the big problems arise.
Yeah.
Once they're 16, 17, 18, 19, you know, we can still work with them, but it's just, you know, it's harder.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm calling on men all over the place to step up, and women, so that we can be doing these sorts of things. For me, it should be routine. It should be normal. Every kid at 13, 14 should be going through a rite of passage. And that's why we're setting up this place here at the moment and running these leadership programs, so that we can be training more people, so that more rites of passage can happen in communities all over the world in all sorts of different ways. There's not just one way to do it.
Yeah.
It's got to be, you know, appropriate for that community, and then it can happen.
Brilliant. Great answer. Can I ask about self-esteem issues, particularly in men, on what challenges come up in your programs?
Yeah. Self-esteem is a huge issue for men. And the number one thing that has impact on a young man or a man's self-esteem is his relationship with his father, and whether he feels he's ever been seen and acknowledged by his father. There are other things, but that's a huge one. And so, you know, once again, on our programs, we actually have a ceremony where the fathers, in front of everyone, acknowledge their sons. Recognize them, tell them what they love about them, what they're proud of. Our hope is to actually deal with this while the boys are 13, 14, rather than end up with 40, 50, 60-year-olds who are still addicted to work and power and money, because they're trying to satisfy their father, who may have died 20 years earlier. You know, it's full on. If you look at a lot of CEOs in major companies who are driven, you'll actually find a lot of them have major father issues. And yet these are the ones who are in power. And they'll do anything to hold on to that power and get more. So it becomes a sort of a self-perpetuating disaster.
Yeah. Oh.
And they'll even abandon their own families and spend 60, 80 hours a week at work trying to get recognition from a person who's not even there anymore. So it's never going to happen.
Yeah. And then for the female as such, what are the big, you know, body image or self-esteem, what are the big concerns that you see again and again?
Well, you're touching on all the topics. You know, body image, self-esteem, huge for women. And if they're functioning as girls, and the only way they'll get self-esteem is if every man notices them and, you know, looks at them a certain way, that's a girl way of behaviour. And as women are getting older and they're not getting that acknowledgement, then they're starting to look at things like plastic surgery and ways to change themselves because they don't feel like they're okay. But that's also because we as men are, you know, saying that unless you look like a young girl, there's something wrong with you. So there's a lot of stuff that's kind of mixed up.
Yeah.
And that's, once again, why, you know, we need to create this shift So that men, instead of looking for young girls, are actually looking for women they can have real relationships with. And so that, you know, across the board, our self-esteem becomes about actually accepting ourselves rather than needing that acceptance from everywhere else.
A very self-love kind of...
Yeah, well, that's where it has to start.
Of course.
If I think there's something wrong with me, and I'm looking for other people to tell me that there's not, and that I'm okay or I'm sexy or whatever, that's not a long-term strategy.
Excellent. Okay, where can people find out more?
My website is the best place, drarne.com, drarne.com, or drarne.com. I run leadership trainings in Australia, I run them overseas. We have father and son camps, we have junior camps for younger kids. I come and speak at lots of schools around the country. So there's lots of things happening. I'm really happy for people to check on the website and see how I can come and help them doing what they're doing.
Excellent. And would you consider coming to Ireland?
I would consider it.
Excellent. Brilliant. Thank you so much.